I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Hello and welcome to This Is Your Laugh, the podcast that interviews well-known female stand-ups and comedy actors about what comedy has taught them about life. This podcast is brought to you by ITV Comedy 50/50, and we're your hosts, Roxy and Alice.
Our guest today is actress and writer Daisy Haggard. Gracing our screens from a young age, her extensive experience means she's ticked off the holy trinity of acting: theatre, television, as well as film. Her sitcom credits fall into cult classic territory, having appeared in Green Wing, Peep Show, Uncle and the League of Gentlemen, amongst many, many more. She's currently filming new Sky comedy series Breeders, starring opposite Martin Freeman, and her darkly comic new gem of a sitcom, Back to Life, on BBC Three, which she co-wrote and stars in, has now been picked up for American screens after being smothered in five-star reviews.
She's had leading roles on stage at the National Theatre, the Royal Court and the Alameda, and has appeared in several feature and short films, including Brit rom-com I Give It a Year. And if you haven't seen her in the flesh or on screen, then you may recognise her voice as that of the Ministry of Magic Lift in two of the Harry Potter films.
And lift us up, doesn't she just, Roxy?
Alice, I knew you were going to do that. I was like, cut that out.
I'd be very restrained. I want to do like she elevates us. Oh, God. Hi, Daisy.
Welcome to the podcast.
Did you like your cheese? Intro.
It was so cheesy. I loved it. I'm going to listen to that every night.
Amazing. Fall asleep to
every
it.
Every time I feel
wake
insecure, I'm just going to play that to people I meet in the street.
You feel like your alarm clock, you know, like a motivational wake up.
That's really good. Well done, guys.
Well, no, you've done it, not us.
So. Oh, so much.
Well done. I'm amazing.
Daisy, I feel like you need the biggest well done because you've gone through basically a labyrinth today to get
We're
here.
We're talking of lifts.
Oh, yeah,
bloody
right.
Lift.
Bloody lifts. Yes.
I got lost on the way here, guys. It's not because I'm stupid.
We found
really,
her on
really
the
clever.
Roof.
I ended up on the roof, but let's not talk about it.
Hi. We found her. Yay.
So let's go back to the very early days of your career. Perhaps when you graduated from drama school. Let's take it from there. So you went to Lambda.
I did.
The London Academy.
The London Academy of Music and Dramatic Art.
Oh, yeah, music. Yes. In there as well, yes. And so what did you think when you graduated from there? What did you think the next few years would look like for you?
I thought that if you set your alarm for 9:59 on the first Monday that you left drama school, your agent would phone you at 10 with a list of all the jobs that you were going to get. And then you would just be really successful very quickly and do lots of auditions and it'd be fine.
And did that happen?
No. I don't think they even knew I graduated. This is my old agent. And no offence, they were brilliant. But I no, it didn't happen. I think about 4 months later, I went, hi, by the way, I've graduated. And then I was like, oh, it's not going to be like that.
Oh, so actually, hang on, you signed before you left then.
I had an agent. Yeah, I had an agent. I was very lucky when I left. And then I did move agents eventually. But I did have an agent then. And it was all great for a bit. But it was, the first bit, I think, was just not what I fantasised would be. It was just, you know, you've got to make you work.
Yeah.
So then I ended up writing a play and putting it on in a small theatre. I mean, you know, it wasn't great, but it was something.
What was it about?
It was about working in the Harrods Christmas decorations department. It's called Shop Floor. We just generated a bit of things. Some people from drama school, we all kind of got together and put on a little play, basically. And yeah, just the realisation that, oh, okay, it's not going to be like that. It's going to be different to that. So I just worked a lot of different jobs and had a few auditions and then occasionally would nearly get something and then not get something. It was a slow burn.
So what changed? Because obviously have done a whole host of television shows since then and now...
Yeah, well, I suppose
show.
The first thing I... the first time I quit my job, only to go back again, was Green Wing. I was like, goodbye, Holmes Place Health Club. I don't need to be a receptionist here anymore. I've got an amazing job. And then I was like, hi. back again.
Oh, really? So you kept coming back to reception jobs?
Oh, I kept quitting my reception jobs dramatically, thinking I was going to be successful. And then
did you do a pretty woman move, you know, like, screw you.
Thankfully, I didn't, because they let me go back. But yeah, then eventually, then it was like, I don't know, I think it was after, I can't remember what it was. I think maybe when Man Straight Woman happened, then I didn't go back to my reception jobs.
And what was that like?
Well, I think I always just thought I would. I still do. Unfortunately, that gym's closed down, so I'd be totally screwed. But I could, or like a pub job, anything. I'm up for it. But yeah, I think it's good. It's good to start that way, because you totally realise how, you know, you go, oh, okay, this is quite hard, this job. And so you generate your own stuff, and you are really grateful when you do get work, and you don't sort of assume anything.
Yeah. Do you use the things that you learn in those jobs in your writing or in your acting? Because I know people say it's a bit of a cliche, oh, I'm so glad I did different things and I had other life experiences, because it's really informed what I've ended up doing. But yeah. Did you actually find that there was anything tangible that you took from those jobs?
Yeah, because of the people that you meet, because, you know, you're in danger otherwise of just meeting actors. And if you were writing, for instance, and then the only characters that you've got in your head or people that you're surrounded with are actors, then that's not, they're brilliant, but they're not the everyman, you know. Like, yeah. So you kind of like, otherwise all your characters are going to be like, oh darling, I had another audition and it didn't go well. You wouldn't, you know,
the rest your of the population.
Point of reference is quite limited. Yeah. So I love doing other jobs. It was brilliant and fun, and there was always loads of really good stories. I used to work at this gym, and I was so naughty. I was like a barmaid. I used to just make people buy me chocolate, because they were all really thin and muscly, and they all secretly wanted chocolate. So I'd be like, it says on the screen, Richard, that you need to go and buy me some chocolate. And then, like, Richard would go, oh, okay, I'll go and get you some chocolate. I got really fat, but it was fun.
And did you ever work in Harrods as well, then?
I worked in Harrods Christmas decorations department, yeah.
Wow. Did you get a discount?
2 years in a row. I didn't want one. No offence, Harrods. No offence, Harrods. I just didn't want lots of Christmas decorations.
So does it bring back really bad memories now?
Christmas music haunts me. Because it was July and I'd be listening to it. So yeah, I did that, and I looked after lots of kids as well. I think those jobs are really, they're part of everything. Yeah. And genuinely, I think there's still part of me that thinks, oh, I could, you know, I might have to go back and work in a pub at some point or whatever.
It's humble.
No, it's not. It's just genuinely like it's not. It's just that thing of, you know, if you've had, you know, you just, it's nothing's forever, is it? You just have to enjoy the moment, but also be prepared to do other things.
Yeah. With your own work then, how much do you think that did have an effect on helping you get cast in television shows and then ultimately leading to you getting to write Back to Life? So with the Harrods one, for instance, like, did you get people along to see that? Like, what was your...
Well, I did. I don't know if it had an effect, but well, my drama school audition was based on a character that I worked with in Harrods. And so then from that, I did a little play. I mean, it really wasn't very good, but it, you know, it was me using my brain when I was otherwise be sitting around feeling a bit like, oh God, a bit shocked. Because you go from, you know, when you go from drama school, you go from working sort of, you know, doing more acting than you're probably going to do in your entire career, let's be honest. Yeah. You know, you're working 12 hours a day and you're, you know, you don't skip a day. You're not allowed to be ill, are you?
Or it's have really a mean the it's way really they make you on. Work that hard and then give you the exact opposite when you leave. They should
I feel a bit angry with drama schools. I want to go into drama schools and say, right, first of all, this is how you do your tax. Yep. This is being self-employed. Get a job. Like, on Mondays to Tuesdays, do like a trade job, like learn how to do something really cool, like become an electrician plastering, something brilliant, plumbing, something that you can apply and use, you know, when you're not working and you could work around. I want to like go and then this is how you do an audition. This is auditioning. This is getting
you
a TV
totally
script.
Do that.
I just think that should be the total priority. Instead, it's like learn a Shakespeare speech and you never have to do that.
No. Are you a patron of any drama schools?
No, because I'm too grumpy with them.
Right.
But I should be. I should go in and be like, right, guys, come on. This is what we're going to teach young drama students.
Totally. On my
these are the things you need to do.
On my darker, more sadistic days, I do sort of fantasize about going into drama school and saying to all the budding young actors, you think you're different. And even as I'm saying this now, you still think you're different.
They will.
And when you're living, you'll still think you're different. But you're not. Yeah. You're just a number.
But I know. You are different. You are different. I would actually say you are different. And actually, I know I would. I think that's too statistic. I would say you are different, but go, no. I would just be like,
be a plumber.
But get a really useful sideline. And it will take the pressure off, and you won't be stressed about,
So did you balance it then? You didn't get too emotionally stressed or anxious about being out of work? Or
I think that I'm stupid enough that I'm quite an optimist, so I'd be really devastated, and then I'd be like, I wonder what's going to happen today. So that just got me through. I don't think it was like strength. I think it was just...
optimism, though.
Just
I love
optimism
that.
And reset stupidity,
So when did you know then you...
I love dreaming about what might happen.
Oh, but yeah,
so I
sort
of more,
fun,
I get more distressed if I knew what was happening for 1 year. I'd be like, but if I like, I'm like, today, anything could happen. Anything could change.
Have and it could in this industry. That's the interesting thing, isn't it?
Has your reality ever actually married up with your fantasy of what would happen?
No.
Say with a career like yours.
No, yes, of course. There's a moment where you suddenly get, you know, you get the job that you really want and you're like, but then you have to do it and then you worry that you're going to be really bad in it. But yeah, you know, of course you have. I mean, you know, getting a show commissions and stuff is amazing, but then there's a moment where you're like, oh my God, I've now got to try and do it well or
this
whatever.
Is real.
But yeah, I would like to go and tell drama students those things.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be great to know that?
Oh, absolutely.
Especially from you. I probably wouldn't be listening to what you're saying.
I think there'd be lot of angry plumbers going, why are all these actors doing really bad plum jobs? How dare you? If a plumber listens to this, they're going to be furious. But
I had a landlord that told me to be a plumber, actually. His daughter was also an actor, and he was like, I've told my daughter, you guys need to be plumbers.
But I just think if you've got a skill that you could do that would keep you going as well, it would just take that...
100%. I'm trying to move into a new place at the minute and I'm putting all these calls out on Facebook for plumbers. And, you know, if you could do it yourself, you'd save a shit ton of money.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So on Back to Life then, obviously we are jumping hugely here.
All right.
But what, in terms of that coming to fruition, had you spent years in development with things, not getting things made?
Yes.
And then, yeah, so
yeah,
what,
yeah, I had loads
so
of ideas.
You never know about these bits. So
no,
go
God,
on,
yeah,
tell
I
us about your failures.
Oh, I had so many failures, don't worry. I had so many years of trying to make things or writing something. I got commissioned and you think you get really excited and you think, oh my God, I've got commissioned from a really good channel and it's, you know, and then it doesn't happen and then you're like, oh, next, and you just have to keep picking yourself up and use the stupid optimism gene and keep going, really, I think. I wanted to write something, get it something made forever. So this is amazing to have had it. It's quite good to have it when you're a bit older as well, because you are much more like realistic about it and a bit more like you're really grateful, but you're also like you don't expect as much, and it's just that's slightly different. Well, I tell myself that because
what do you think was different about Back to Life that made people say, yeah, we were actually going to make it?
I don't know. It's definitely its own thing. And I think I was very lucky because two brothers, Harry and Jack Williams, really sort of believed in it. And also, we took a long time to develop it, and at times a frustratingly long time to develop it, because I was like desperate just to get on with it. But the time was a really good thing in the end, because it meant that we then shot a taster tape, which they paid for very kindly, and we sort of managed to capture the tone. So I think what happened is that we were able to, I think if someone had just read it cold, they might have just been like, what is this? Am I meant to find this funny or sad or what? You know, they would have got confused, just like they'd have got genre blind. And I think because we were able to film this little thing, we were able to literally just sort of say, this is how it's going to feel. Do you like it? And then that really helped because people seemed to like it and they understood it. And they understood its voice. So I feel like that that really helped.
That was the difference. Yeah. It's really,
which is why I'm always telling everyone and all young people who are doing stuff, I'm like, just make your own.
Just
make your own things and try and explain it. And, you know, try it just because no one will be able to. Show people what you're trying to say.
So on the note, actually, of Back to Life, we should probably explain what it is for people who haven't seen it without giving it away. It's a beautifully written sitcom. I'm very sycophantic in these podcasts, but I really genuinely mean
it. Oh, you always like this.
I have a special reverence for you. But it beautifully toes the line between sort of laughter and grief. I think I'm quoting The Guardian when I say that, but they say skillfully toes the line, actually, I think. But it's about, essentially, you play Miri, who is a character who's she's just been released from prison after serving 18 years for quite a serious crime and has to return back to her fairly parochial small town and sort of rebuild her life and blend in. I mean, it is a very serious issue at the heart of the sitcom. So I guess I'm wondering why you chose to write it specifically as a sitcom.
When I was pitching it to Harry, when we were talking about ideas, the main thing was, is I don't think you have to choose what something is. So I feel like it could have been just as easily a drama in a way. I think everything's funny and everything's sad and everything's everything. I felt like you don't have to choose what it is. So I didn't think if I knew it was going to be a comedy in a sense, but I knew it would be as sad as it would be funny. I just sort of went, let's just write this thing, and it could have been a drama.
Do you think it needed that though? Because obviously there's the pathos, but do you think it needed those moments of levity to balance it out?
I think everything does. I mean, if I watched something that was just serious, I'd be like, that's not real. That's not true. Like, you know, I've been in really dark situations where someone gets the giggles. You know, it's humour everywhere. And anything I write, whether I wrote a really big dramatic film, everything I wrote would have humour in it, because every situation I've ever been in that's been awful has been in some way funny to me, and that's just how I see things.
I think that's right. I think interesting where the line is, isn't it? Because I think with something like, we were just talking about Succession, for instance, right, before we started, and I think with Succession, in my head, but maybe you disagree, I would say that is a drama that's also funny, as opposed to being a comedy that's dramatic.
No, that's true. So it leans over that way, but it's definitely got loads of...
But it's loads of detail
and humour and, you know...
Yeah, like
you're let off
stuff
the hook on gags, you know, you don't have to have, you know, in a really lovely way.
There are some brilliant insults, exactly.
It's so sharply written.
Yeah. And you co-wrote it with Laura. Is it Solon?
Yeah, Laura
Solon.
Solon. Well, I hope so, because that's what I've been saying, and I know her really well. Then she'll turn to me one day and be like, Daisy, it's fucking Solon. Solon. Not Solon. Oh, God, I did it wrong. Oh, I couldn't even do my own joke.
We've got a friend that's saying this, grown up saying his own name wrong. So
that's what I've done, so don't worry. I don't know how to say my name.
What's it like working in a duo then, a writing duo?
Well, so I created it and had basically worked on it for 4 years. And then when we got a pilot commission, I was 8 months pregnant. So it was encouraged that I got a co-writer on. And I called Laura because I love Laura and she's really clever and has a very different brain to me. And she's in LA and she's super busy and successful. But she's got a really sort of clear, like, I don't know, just really different. I'm the one that's like, oh God, I've just been writing. I've just killed someone. She's like, okay. She's like, she sort of comes in and cleans up my mess.
Had you worked with her before then?
We'd worked together. She actually wrote on Man Street Women and acted together, but no, we'd never written together. So it was a bit of, you know, I just sort of had a strong instinct about it. And it's cool. I mean, like, she's in LA. She does other things as well. She's super, you know, busy, but she's basically all over this. And we have very different skills, so we just kind of send it to each other and send each other notes and thoughts and bash out ideas. I've really enjoyed it, actually. Right. It's something I was a bit nervous about because I was quite precious about Back to Life. It was like my, you know, I was a bit like, oh, it's my thing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, actually, it's been amazing.
Did you create the character for yourself? How did you approach it? Did you go, I know I'm really good at playing X, Y, and Z, so I work backwards from there?
No, weirdly, Miri was like the last person we thought about properly, and there was a moment when we were writing where we were like, oh God, what if she's like, have we even written her well? Because I got so much more excited about writing other people and like getting really sort of carried away with the other voices because they were more sort of, you know, sometimes the central character is harder.
100%.
But I'd always just know that I'd always be like, I think they don't, I know I'm going to do that. I think I'll just do it on the day. Fingers crossed. So there was a moment in read through, I was like, oh my God, what if it's like, I'm like really the shit one and then I get fired from my own show.
I did read somewhere that you like made a decision to give yourself this fringe and then you were stuck with it.
I know. I mean, we were laughing about that. My agent, I was like, sorry, I had a shot to be really hot. I could have been really glamorous and really nice outfits, but I'm basically made myself look hideous.
With Laura then, are you planning to sort of like, would you write always with somebody else, do you think? Or do you think you might write by yourself? Like,
I love to write something else with Laura at some point, or if we got a chance to write a second series, that'd be lovely. But I really, really want to also write my own. Yeah. And so that's my next plan, really.
Just when you're not 8 months pregnant.
Well, which I'm not at the moment. So that's good. No more children for me. I am done. So yeah, no, I definitely,
this is
definitely
a message to Joe. Yeah. Sorry, we can cut that.
No, I think he's all right with that. Yeah, so I'm definitely done.
Right, yeah.
What? No, sorry. I definitely want to write my own. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I just went off into I don't want any more children. And you don't have to cut that. It's
no,
true.
Okay, just access.
If I do get pregnant, just come and tell me off. Yeah. Everyone who listens to this, if they see me heavily pregnant, can just be like, you said that you were done.
What I about, like, because now you've done your own thing, do you think you're going to find it hard to go back and just like act? Actually, sorry, I know you're doing this thing with Martin Freeman, but do you think there's less appeal just to act on other people's stuff now or not? Like, you still have
this. I think
it was
quite liberating because you don't have to worry about it. You can just go home. So when I was doing Breeders, I would be like, I'll learn my lines on the way home and then I could just go home. I didn't have to sit up and rush
so chill.
I didn't have to like lie awake anxiously all night. I just learned my lines. I was like, oh my God, acting.
Amazing.
So it's all, you know, it's all appealing because it's all different. It's just about variety, isn't it?
Something that I think both of us have found a bit is that we're getting told when we're trying to pitch stuff and write stuff that commissioners are saying, we want your story. Tell us your story. Now, Back to Life is not autobiographical as far as I'm aware.
No.
Did you encounter any of that as sort of those hurdles or not really? Did you manage to navigate around? Well, obviously you did manage navigate around it because you got it made.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I know why they're saying that, which is that obviously when you write from personal experience, it's sort of more truthful, isn't it? The truth is, Back to Life is obviously an extreme backstory. Her backstory is really different. But in terms of the detail of, like, you know, relationships and friendships and the characters, there is lots of that that is sort of, you know, there's lots of that that I can draw from my own life, or my dad is a recycling obsessive, or, you know, my mum is not quite the same as Geraldine James character in it, but at all. But, you know, I think that just means write what you know, in a sense, you know, try and sort of make stuff relatable because it'll probably be more authentic or truthful. So I think you do that with everything, even if you do an extreme idea. I think if I was writing a monster movie, I'd still write from experience, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally, to give it that authenticity. But I do like the fact that you were able to write a story that you hadn't lived, and I do feel there is a bit of a trend at the moment to write something that you can claim, then do an article on saying I experienced
this. Right, I haven't had that recently because I haven't pitched anything recently, but there's always I find there's always little phases of things that people want, and you just have to navigate that, and if you've got a good story, just sort of really fight to push that through, and the more you believe in it, the more than other people will, I think.
Do you find that there's a recurring theme that goes throughout all your work? Like,
for
me, it's, well, I have death. I mean, it's
death.
Probably just death underpins everything, you know, nihilism and all that, but I do feel like death just creeps its way into every single thing I write.
Really? Yeah.
Yes, someone's always dying or about to die, or,
I probably, death is what,
death is core to...
Death is pretty much...
I think I have purpose,
definite
loss of or lack of purpose, trying to find purpose. That tends to be a thing. It's very it's very hard to write about. It's not very concrete.
Your theme is lack of purpose.
Lack of purpose. Mm. I think so. If you had
being
to
lost
summarise
or,
it.
Yeah.
The irony of working really hard in a really focused way to write something about lack of purpose.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think there's probably always a bit of hope. I like things to be quite dark, but then I really love there to be a sort of sweetness to them and a bit of optimism.
That definitely comes across in Back to Life, I think.
I think I quite like that sort of innocence sometimes. Because I think of Back to Life really as a kind of an adult beginner. It's like a coming of age film, really. Like a sort of indie film about, it could be about a teenager, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sort of like an awkward coming of age film, but it's just, so it's all the things I ever liked. Like, I love those kind of films. And then I also like dark, weirder things.
Yeah.
It's sort of like that.
And I was going to say, because there's such a vulnerability to that character, and there is something very youthful about her.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it's almost like she's trapped. You know how Kimmy Schmidt doesn't develop
in that
time she's in the bunker? It feels a bit like that.
And also how innocence can actually come out of very seemingly dark places, you know, yeah. or quite twisted places sometimes.
Well, there are moments where you see her darkness, and also you don't know about her prison experience. You don't know there's another side of her which may be completely lacking in innocence, but there's, in terms of like just having to navigate like everyday life at this stage in her life, she's an innocent, yeah. which is the irony because obviously her past is really dark.
This is a controversial question, heads up, but if you could rewire something about the industry, if you had the ability to change an aspect of this industry, what would you do? If you could wave a magic wand.
Well, I mean, I think we need to be listening and hearing all the voices, don't we? I mean, that's hopefully on the turn.
Yeah, I think that is. Yeah, you can see it happening.
All the voices, I would say.
All the voices.
All of the voices.
That's a good
answer. Not just one or two of the voices, but all of the voices of all of the people, because we live in a world. You know, we live in a world.
Yeah.
More than one kind of person.
There may be many worlds.
Yes, exactly. So I just think expansion. But I feel like I really hope that's happening anyway.
Fingers crossed, yeah.
Yeah, I think that is. Do you think that comedy has changed you in terms of your personality at all? Like, did you, when you left drama school, think you were going to go into comedy specifically or not
at
all?
No, I didn't. I didn't know, really. I did. I remember there was a day when I did two auditions. I did an audition for like a really sort of gritty northern drama playing like a footballer, and then an audition for a really posh, silly sort of doofus woman in a really extreme comedy. And I got down to the last two for both of them. I didn't know which one I was going to get. They'd have a terrible football audition.
You actually had to play football?
Yeah, it was so bad.
Amazing.
I was terrible. And I think after that day, I knew that I definitely wasn't going to get that.
Did you lie on your spotlight CV? Did you say football's one of my skills?
Yeah, I thought I could do flamenco dancing. And so then I got the comedy one. And
the posh one?
Yeah, and so I was like, oh, that's going to probably go in that way for a bit.
Yeah.
So I didn't know what I was going to do, but then I did Harold. You know, I worked with Harold Pinter, and I played my sort of. I did a mixture.
Yeah, I
think once you realise that you can be. I think I suddenly saw the power in being silly, because I thought there were lots of people out there who were beautiful and very, very talented, but they were more afraid of being idiots. And I was like, if I'm not afraid of being an idiot, I should just let's just work on that. I'm never going to be able to pout as well as that girl. Because I'll always giggle at myself if I'm pouting, so I may as well just make a face.
Do you enjoy auditions? Is it something that you look forward to doing?
Sometimes. I used to quite like them. Now I think I haven't done one for so long.
Mm.
Not because I'm, but just because I've been busy.
No, because I just get offers.
No, not at all. But just because I've been busy, and so I've been writing and then doing, and then straight into Breeders. I started Breeders the day I handed back to Life In.
Wow.
And then I finished Breeders and took 2 months off. So I haven't done one for ages. So I think I'd be really nervous. And I never learn my lines for auditions.
You do?
Never?
No.
Really?
Because I'm really bad the first few minutes of having learnt my lines if I'm nervous. So I was like, well, my dad always says, he says, create the circumstances in which you can shine. That's his sentence. It's a very good sentence. And no, I don't, controversially, and I'm sure there's some casting directors who hate me for that, but the truth is I really struggle to learn lines. So, and I've got two, I mean, it was the same before I had kids, but I'm going to use them as an excuse as well. But, I've got two kids. If I spent all my energy learning the lines, then in the audition, I might know my lines, but would I be good?
Yeah.
So my thing is with the time you've got, sometimes you have no time.
Honestly, I'm loving
this.
So
with the time you've got, do the thing that will make you good.
Okay, you've literally converted
me.
No, because
I might ruin your entire career.
I don't get jobs when I audition, so this is great. Maybe I should stop learning the lines.
What I do is I go, I'm really sorry, I'm not, I mean, if I give me the job, if I've got the job, I'll learn the lines. Fine. I'm not going to not know.
I'll do that bit as well, yeah.
The whole memory test bit, I can do that. I just, if I focus all this energy panicking, then I get so nervous about getting the lines right that I then forget all the stuff that I may be all right at, which is the acting bit or the kind of listening bit, that I just sort of do a weird parrot thing, and it's not very good. If you've got a week or two and you can learn them properly and they can go into the right part of you and you can feel really comfortable and playful, that's great. But if you're given something 24 hours before and you're working another job and you're busy and you just think, I haven't got time and it's just upsetting me and I'm getting really anxious, then you're probably not going to be that good if you've spent all your energy doing the memory test rather than doing the...
Totally.
So then what happens is that then by default, if you then just read it and understand it and keep saying it, doing it out loud and playing with it and sort of really learning the under bit, not just the lines... Weirdly, sometimes you end up learning the lines, but you've taken all the pressure of yourself.
That's a really good thing, and you have it in your hand,
and you're like, you know, you make sure you can look up loads. You don't sit down like this. Not you bloody work on it. You just don't put all the energy into the technical aspect of the job, which, quite frankly, you're going to do one day.
Of course, I think that makes much more sense.
And then obviously, there are times where you do an American audition, there are times where you get a recall, and then you have to, you know, not to say never do it. But, you know, there are times where you just can't. Then.
So for the US, you're saying you would always learn the lines, is that right?
So if I've never been to an American audition, like in America, I don't think. But when I do a self-tape, I stick the lines up behind the camera.
Such a good idea.
I've never heard about this, yeah.
Does it give you cross-eyes sometimes?
I would just read them so that I can be really free and show them how I could do it once I'd had the time to learn my lines. Yeah. Otherwise, I've got to do that self-tape tomorrow morning at 10. If I learn the lines for that... Oh, I won't be able to learn the lines, and I'll just do a bad self-tape. Yeah. So how do I need to do a good self-tape? I need to read it. I need to make sure I'm alive. I need to make sure I understand what I'm saying. So, you know, I got stitched up with Breeders because I stuck the lines up behind the thingy, and I was a bit grumpy, and I just had a baby. I was like, oh, the other one's watching Night Guard, and there's a newborn sort of asleep, and I sort of... Joe held them, actually, and I sort of did the thing, and I was like, I'll be fine. And then they said, can you come for a recall?
Oh,
2 days. And I was like, oh, shit. But, you know, even then I didn't. I was like, I'll do my best, you know. I'll have it in my hands.
Well, they say you should have it in your hand because apparently then it gives them the impression that that's not the finished product. So if you're very good...
But this is the thing. I mean, obviously, this is different for everybody. And I know loads of people who were like, oh, my God, I could never go into an audition without learning my lines. I feel so much better when I do. And I'm like, that's totally great.
You do.
But it's what you... Yeah, exactly. That's brilliant. But for me, I would just be so anxious about getting something wrong that I'd forget that it doesn't matter, you know, like...
But that's it, you see. But I think it's so nice to hear from someone who successfully auditions that learning the lines is not...
There are a few cast directors that really hate it, though. So just always check.
You can give me their names afterwards.
I think there's one that did a whole, like, thing about how she hated it. Right. Like, that's why you don't see me.
Blacklisted.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. But, yeah, I think that you can... You know, it's really not about not working. It's just about...
No, exactly.
But, you know, everyone wants to see the person that's right for the job. And so do what you can do to... be best.
Yeah, totally.
Without getting totally stressed.
What do you do to switch off? Do you have any major passions outside of your career, or is there just no time for anything at the moment?
Drinking.
Yes. She did ask for a gin.
No. We don't know. We're very social at home, me and Joe. We're really social. We've got loads of really fun friends, and we love just hanging out with the kids and playing.
That's
really
so nice.
And doing discos in the front room and having a big bubble bath and just being idiots.
Do you find it quite easy to detach then? Like, you know, there's almost two different people. There's Daisy, the career woman.
I'm not really a career woman, though. So, no, I think they're all the same. They're all quite the same person. I found it hard. It's hard when you're doing a, you know, like something Back to Life that is consuming. And Joe was doing the music. So we were like, you know, it was hard to stop then. But then we'd sort of, you know, just mix it all in, really. I bought a house in Greece, which makes me sound really rich.
Oh,
not at all. It was more that I did a really stupid thing, really, and just kind of went, it was like, we were talking about it, and I was like, we could just like remortgage and we could just like get this little ruin, and then one day.
Oh,
so
God.
So did when we didn't like couldn't afford
that's
it.
That's a dream moment. That's
moment, actually. Then that was basically after talking to somebody who was saying that, you know, oh, do things when you're young, you can figure it out. And so I did a bit of a wild move there. But it's worked out, and we slowly sort of renovated it over the years.
Oh,
and then
God,
where is
amazing.
It?
It's in Crete. Oh. So we went there for 2 months, and we just totally hung out.
Oh, my God. So we've
got a neighbour who, like, brings us apricots, and we just totally switched off, and it was amazing. And the kids, like, know everyone in the village, and it's just really magical.
That's why you're glowing.
Really cool. You did look very brown.
No, that was ages ago. No, I got back a month ago. We're still thinking about when can we go back. But, think, you know, like, that's obviously really, you know, and then my plan was, like, when work dries up, I can rent it out and start a Cretan business.
Oh, Airbnb. That would be so nice.
You know, like, end up living, you know, on an island with loads and loads of dogs, with renting out little cottages in Crete. I'll be very happy.
Oh, my goodness, will come.
So, like, but, yeah, no, we're pretty good at relaxing and having a nice time. And, and social and sort of silly.
Sounds like you've got good balance.
Well, I mean, no, because I really believe that family and friends and all that is so important. You've got to get your priorities in check. No, but you have to get, like, that's why, you know, I had a really busy year and it was like, we have to readdress this. So 2 months of no work at all has to happen, and then it did happen, and then now I'm really skint and panicking.
what do you, for those 2 months then, do you just say like to your agent, I'm busy, I'm not,
I was like, you know, I was like, well, because I hadn't stopped as well, and I was like, we just have to, and they're amazing, but I'm with Troika and they're absolutely amazing. They get my priorities, they understand if anything's filming away, I'm like, nah.
Yeah.
You know, I want to put my kids to bed, and you know, when we're filming Back to Life, I still manage to put them to bed every night.
Well, I've read about this, and, because it just sounded brilliant. I would just say for people who don't know that changed the filming schedule, so you didn't do lunch, is that right? But then everybody got to go
whenever
home.
Whenever we couldn't. You can't always do that. But yeah, we were like, let's try and make it really good hours.
I think that's brilliant.
So people like can go home to their flatmates or their boyfriends or their girlfriends or their partners or whatever, and
because they are ludicrously long days on set, and you do sometimes think this could move a bit faster.
Yeah, I mean, I think I understand sometimes it can't, but there are some situations and some shows where you're like, it doesn't have to be so hard.
You need to decompress, or surely you can't be putting out your best work all the time if you're
So everyone's different, aren't they? Like, there's some work ethics are like, you know, just work everyone to the bone, and sometimes that works. But I think I'll always try and do shows where everyone can have a life, because I believe that having a life makes you better at your, for me it makes me better at my job, so you know, to know that people could have a nice weekend, you know, and actually have a break and then come in, then I think that makes you look forward to work more. Whereas if you feel like brutalized and just shredded, then you know, you're probably not going to be your best.
No, but hang on, just I'm confused now, because Back to Life is filmed by the sea.
So we did 1 week in Hythe and Dungeness, but the rest of the time we were in like a 7 minute, I did a circle around my house.
Okay, amazing.
Very <sad. laughs> I was like 7 minutes from my house.
This will do.
The kids will come for lunch.
That's so nice.
So yeah, but I took the whole family to Hythe as well.
Oh wow, brilliant.
So yeah.
What are your aspirations for the next couple of years then? I know it's bad to keep looking forward all the time in life.
But I would like to. I would love to write another series of Back to Life.
I'd love you to too.
I would love Breeders to go again, because that's a really fun job too and a really great part. Mm. And then I would like to write. I'd like to write some films.
Yes, I was going to say.
I really want to write a couple of films, really different ones.
Comedy or?
I'd like to do a really good monster film, and I'd like to do a really good, cool indie film, I think, to start with, and then I've got another series idea. So I've got lots that I want to do, but I also want to have like 3 really long holidays.
Well, you've got the Airbnb.
I want to never
start,
work,
you know,
in school holidays, and then always work 9 to 5 or 9 to 2. So to work out a way of basically
this is your last event of the
working
day.
Really hard, but then with really big. Big gaps and
lots of nap times.
And lots
nap
of nap
time.
Times.
Yeah. Sounds like an excellent aspiration.
That's my aspiration.
So very finally, because it actually is 2 o'clock, isn't it? But this is a question we ask all of our guests.
Yes.
If there's one thing that comedy has taught you about life, what do you think that would be?
Well, I mean, you know, just laugh at stuff.
Yeah.
Don't take it. You know, it's going to be all right. Just have a laugh. I mean, that's terrible, isn't it? Something really awful happens, and then they're like, oh, Daisy said laugh.
Just have a laugh. Maybe it's true.
No, but do your very best to find the positive.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you can't. So when you can, grab it.
Yeah. Very good word.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. For your joy.
Thanks.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.